Hello again, welcome everyone. This is Julie Canusa, the podcast Training a Pointing Labrador. And this is going to be episode number 88. And today's, we're getting a few weeks away from Christmas on this particular one. I'm going to talk about pointing. Considering this is Training the Pointing Labrador, and I've had, you know, we're getting up close to 100 of these things. And very often they're not about pointing. And I thought maybe a little bit for a Christmas thing, we would just talk about pointing for those that are interested in it. I know I have a lot of people on here that don't have pointing dogs or don't even do that stuff. They're here for a lot of the other dog-related stuff. But this one is going to be for just people that are curious about it or have one or already know everything and just want to hear if there's some little snippet that I have here. But I'm going to talk about a little bit of clarity on having a pointing dog, because it's what's out there, what people talk about and perceptions and convictions and experiences and things that people have, is it's always very interesting to me, because there's a lot of really knowledgeable, experienced people that understand that this doesn't fit into a little box. There's not the way that it is, and I really mean that. There's not a way that it is. This has been, as I've discovered over the last 30 years, it's not something that just fits into a little quantifiable, this is how you do it, this is how it is. But it just isn't that way. So I heard recently, I was talking to some people, and they were told they got a pointing lab puppy. You know, never teach him to sit, because I know a lot of the pointing breeds in their training thing, sit isn't really a part of it. And you know, you don't want a dog sitting on a point, of course, none of us do. So therefore, you avoid sit. So that's one of the big contentions that's out there real strongly. And you don't teach them control stuff early on, because that impacts what they do in the open field. That's a big conviction that they have. And then we go to the other side of it. There's a large group of people who, you know, think that you get them on birds real early and you have them corded up and then you immediately control what they're doing, and therefore you teach them what you want by having them do what you want, you know, when they're little puppies, and that's how you develop the pointing and just every variation of everything all everywhere I've heard. And if people have a certain experience, especially if they have it, you know, a couple times, two or three times, or even a few more, then that becomes what you do. Now, this is how this pointing lab thing works. And so that's what they do. And if a dog doesn't fit into that particular kind of training, then there's a problem with the dog. And so I'm just going to lend my experience and thoughts on the nature of the pointing retrievers and just, you know, how you go about, in my experience, how you go about developing it with whatever dog you have. Now, I don't take into training pointing breeds, not because, you know, they're awesome dogs. I tell you, English pointers, that's like, what, you know, listening to a Tchaikovsky symphony thing, that's one of the most beautiful dog things I've ever seen in my life. The way those dogs are. I don't train those dogs because I don't know them on a real fundamental basis. I don't have all my life history with those kind of dogs. I don't train, you know, short hairs. I don't train. So anything I say is not any expertise on any of those kind of dogs, because I don't have the experience. I don't have the knowledge, and I don't know those dogs from the inside out. I do have a lot better understanding of retrievers who point naturally. So that's what I'm going to talk about. That's where my experience and knowledge base is. And that's what I'm commenting on right now. Now, I believe, based on what I've seen in the pointing breeds, when you look at those guys, I mean, I remember seeing a little 8-week-old English pointer puppy. And the owner brought it over here. He's a good friend of ours. We trained his lab for him. And the dog was out, and there was a little feather. I don't even remember what kind of bird feather it was. There was a feather on the ground, and that little hummer locked up in his tripod point, you know, at 8 weeks. He didn't know what he was doing. He was just doing what he does, you know, without any thinking. And I mean, those little guys are amazing. They're just amazing. And I know they don't all do that, But that was, you know, that is like their primary, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm compelled to do this kind of behavior other than eating and defecating and stuff. I mean, that's what they do. And there are some pointing labs that are similar to that, that the first time they ever smell a bird-like thing, before they even have any thought or any awareness, they point. There are some that do that. And there are many more that do not, that are going to eventually be good pointing dogs. And then, you know, there's some dogs that smell a feather and it's just like you threw a little kibble down there and they're going to go eat it. So you get a lot of different stuff. When you get a little 8-week-old pointing retriever puppy that points and does it more than one time, you know, that's an excellent sign. And that is they're doing it without you getting in the middle of it. They just are doing it. So that's a real good thing. Sometimes they point. I've seen them point, you know, a little piece of plastic or paper or something that's sort of just wiggling in the breeze. And I've seen them detect the wiggle, see the wiggle visually, and then lock up. So that's kind of a cool thing to see. And I've seen dogs that saw those, you know, or around those wiggles and never even were aware of it, that also became pointing dogs. And I could go on and on with all these kind of examples. You know, sometimes they like to point. The pointing labs that I've seen, they're real good at pointing cats. So if you have one of the house cats is around, or I remember one locked up on a wild cat on our property. You know, they just lock up and it's a cat. And I've had them that pointed better on furry things like cats and rabbits than they ever did on feather things. I've seen that. That's not common. But I've seen that kind of thing. So when you see them point stuff, okay, that's better than not seeing them point stuff. But that's not necessarily definitive that this is going to go on and be what's going to be a useful, consistent, performing, pointing retriever in the upland field. It doesn't, those things that don't necessarily go together, but they may. So this is going to be a hard one for me to succinctly describe, and it's, you know, maybe or maybe not be a hard one to understand, but I'm going to do my best with this on what I've seen and what happens. So when the ideal time is to acquaint your dog with these little things, as I've said many times on this before, is, you know, as soon as they can actually grasp the concept of the bird smell and the bird presence. And you need to understand, when now we're talking about little guys, when you're little guys, not all the time mentally are they grasping what some of their, you know, what their nose and eyes might see. And people sometimes don't take that into account. You can have a little 8-week-old puppy. And again, I've seen little 8-week-old pointing retrievers, as I'm going to talk about right now. They just get the smell of a bird and just let go. Or I've seen them when they're little guys like that, see a bird and just freeze, absolutely freeze. So they do it by scent and they do it by sight. I've seen little puppies experience both of those things and go on as if it weren't there at all, as if they hadn't smelled it or they hadn't seen it. And that doesn't mean anything necessarily other than there was no connection between the olfactory, you know, or the optic nerve and then the reasoning part of their brain yet. And so you can't read into that necessarily. Now, they may never ever point and never ever, you know, be very good at recognizing that stuff. And so that's what you're seeing. The connection will never really be made. But usually you're just waiting for the maturity level, and that can be different. Just like it is with people. You know, some people can do things early and some people have to wait a little bit longer. And it's the same thing with the dog. So that is, if you see it, that's a good thing. If you don't see it, that may or may not be significant. And so you just continue on with exposures to real bird things. Now, I'm going to say this, and this differs a lot from I know a lot of people. When I have little guys and when I'm helping people with their little guys, I do not intervene on the bird-dog connection and growing understanding. because, and this is just based on experience with all kinds of dogs, if they're in there, so they, okay, these little guys are not born, they're not on the earth going, okay, I know what upland hunting is, I know what a bird is, and so that's what everybody, when they go on the walk, they're trying to hunt birds while they're on the walk. And the dog does not know this. They're not quartering, or if it looks like they are, they're still not quartering. They're just gathering information from the wind and they're running around. They don't know this stuff. And then they don't know, oh, look, that's a bird, and that's what I'm all about. And if they just don't know this stuff. You do, but they do not. And so when you go out, the first thing that has to happen is these little dogs, whatever they are, flusher, pointer, somewhere, not a great pointer, absolutely fantastic pointer, whatever they are, they have to, one, find out, okay, there's this big world out there and it has all this stuff, and some of it hurts you when you step on it, and some of it pokes you in the face, and then there's these smells, and then there's this excrement from all these things, and you know, sometimes that's just like truffles lying everywhere, and then there's stuff that, and there's bugs, and there's all this stuff, and then there's this bird thing too, and they have to learn through exposure the difference between those things and the specialness of that bird scent. Now, if you're training a pointing dog, don't put dead stuff out there for them to go find and point, because they, you know, they're supposed to retrieve the dead or wounded stuff. They're not supposed, they're, you know, if you wound a bird and it drops and runs and hides, they're supposed to go get it. So when you want to develop pointing, you don't have them run out there and look for stuff and grab it. So I don't ever put dead birds out, because I am never hunting a dead bird. I know what people are thinking. I'm going to teach them to look for bird sand and look around. But when you want to develop pointing, I never do that, because I don't ever want even one time for a dog to learn, you go find it, grab it. There are some dogs, if you do that, they will learn that very quickly. I go grab it. And then you may never recover from that. And then, you know, other dogs have. There's going to be somebody listening to this that put dead birds out, and now their dog is a fantastic pointer. Right. Yeah, so you just roll in the dice. Which one do I have? You know, am I going to have one I can do all kinds of screwball counter stuff to what I want to do, and it's going to be fine? Or just eliminate that possibility? So, in training other people's dogs, I never let something that can be detrimental to me happen if I can possibly do that. So I don't plant dead stuff out there. But when there are live birds out there, they need to be able to understand what that is, how they gather that data, that it's meaningful. They have to be able to get the off-gassing from the bird in their nose, and then get that on the olfactory nerve, right? And then have that nerve go to the brain, and then have the brain go, ha, this is this thing here, and it's very compelling to me. You have to wait for that to happen. It might be instantaneous, and it might take a while. Because I've seen it take no time to maybe even a month or two with repeated exposure. So you get what you get. They have to understand that before you start doing any other stuff. Because if they're trying to noodle this out, just like, I don't know if you can remember when you were trying to learn to read or to write, or to put together sentences, and to, you know, how to add and subtract. It wasn't like somebody showed you and went, here, this is what you do, and boom, you had it. You know, there's a few people that are that way. But mostly you sit there and you kind of struggle over it, and you work over it, and pretty soon you figure it out at the speed that your brain does that. And then you have to practice a little bit, and then you begin to be okay at it, and then you get pretty good at it. It's just like that with these little guys. It's exactly the same. So they have to understand what scent is, and then different scents, and then what they're supposed to do with it. If, while they're in that process, you got a cord on them, and right when they're going, and thinking whatever thoughts they are about this smell, you're already stopping them, and you're doing all this kind of stuff. You're introducing some thinking that interferes with that really grasping the concept. All right, so I'm trying to teach you how to read as a very young person. At the same time, I'm giving you all the rules for your soccer game. And we're practicing, you know, it's like I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone, right? You got to read this. And the rules are that you cannot, you know, I think I'm going to lose on the soccer and the reading. So if we work on the reading, and then when we do soccer later, we do soccer. But you have to allow that thinking and that awareness at whatever pace it happens, happen in that little dog first. And that's one of the things that I see people do, which can be very, very counter to what their ultimate goal is. And they got the best of intentions, right? Best of intentions trying to do this stuff. But it winds up making their dog be, okay, we go out there, and then they're going to get some dogs, not all, a little concerned. A little, oh, okay, I can, you know, stuff happens to me when I go out. This is not the kind of fun that a little puppy should be having. You know, they're out there, whoa, I don't know. Or, so they're concerned, and so they become more tentative. They don't have, they're not allowed to develop confidence in their own thinking and their own intuition and their own just natural tendency. They don't get to develop any confidence in that. I think that's critical to developing a good pointer. So the other thing is that, you know, you see dogs, and somebody will say, I did out of the court and I did with my dog, and now look at him and he's great, so therefore that's the thing to do. You know, you don't know what somebody really did, or you don't know the whole story. So be careful about everybody knowing exactly what you ought to be doing. If it goes counter to allowing that little dog to develop. These guys are not robots. They are not robots. And they do not do what they're supposed to do. They're just like you and me. They are working, bumbling through life at their speed, on their level, with their ability to understand things. And the better that you get that, the better it is for you. I had an interesting phone call from somebody who is a psychiatrist. And he had some questions about a dog I had trained in somebody. And he wanted to know how well trained the dog was for some things he was doing with this person. And that, you know, I was like, what do you mean how well is a dog trained? I didn't know what that meant. He goes, well, does it follow commands? Does it do what somebody tells it? And so I had to explain to a psychiatrist, just like people, a dog, and I trained the dog, and it learned stuff. It's good. We had a good thing going. And then when I hand the dog to the owner, the owner does not have the conviction and the knowledge and the follow-through and the consistency that I do. So that was like getting a substitute teacher in at school, right, who didn't have all the tools that the regular teacher had. It shows the dog finds out, you know, is this the same set of standards? Am I supposed to do the same as I did with Julie, or is this different? And so I'm explaining to a human behavioral person that dogs are not robots just any more than we are. You know, they're going to find out what the situation is and then reflect that situation and act accordingly. And it's amazing to me that people just still look at dogs like it's a dog widget, and I have it programmed, and then if you want it to do this, you do A, B, and C, and then it will. It's just, guys, it's not like that, okay? Because if it was, you know, I would have been trained, it would be so easy, and it's not. It's not to produce a really confident, effective dog that does, you know, really believes in what it's doing and also does it really well. It's just not a piece of cake to do. And I, you know, I was surprised that I'm talking to a human behavioralist telling them how dogs are not widgets. So, yeah, the dog's trained. And for me, it would be great. For other people who know less, not so great. So I don't know how well was the dog trained. So it's true that way with the pointing thing. Right? I put a cord on, I do this, I do that, then it's going to point. And I know there's going to be some dog that thrived under that, and that's fantastic. But there are many, many more who would not. And so in having to train a variety of different kind of dogs, that's why I've kind of come up with this, how to figure out how to approach this as you're going along. So the first thing, again, you have to do on this pointing thing is they have to have exposure to real birds, not dead ones, live birds, because a living thing is a different presence to detect than a dead thing. And we, you know, you and I may not understand that, but that's what these guys are bred to do, is hunt. And it is a major difference. There's a different energy. There's a different everything from a living thing and a dead thing. And so they need living things. And as I've gone into great detail before, I'm not going to do it here, if they're caged, if they're tethered, if they smell like you and the bird cage and a little bit of the oil from your gloves because you check the whatever on your tractor. It needs to be where they don't go, oh, whenever I smell greasy glove, corn, there's going to be a bird there, because that's not what we're all about. So don't underestimate, the intuitiveness and the authenticity of these dogs. It needs to be the real thing. It has to be that. And if you put control in there ahead of time, you are interfering with them figuring this thing out. Now, you may or may not see point. If you see point, that's really good. If you don't see point, you don't know yet. You may never see it. You may see it at some other time. I can tell a zillion stories here of dogs who showed absolutely no point, and then at some magical time started pointing, and then pointed extremely well. And then there's dogs who don't point, and then show you a little bit of a flash point, and then don't, and then do, and then don't, and then don't for a while, and then if the bird never moves, they'll stand there. But the minute the bird moves, then they're gone. So you get all those different things, right? And some of those dogs at flash point, you can capture that and turn it into something that's real. And then sometimes you cannot. It's not always the same. And if it requires your presence, it's my opinion now, if it requires your presence for that dog to hold the point, if you're not there screaming whoa at it or saying whatever, using electricity or whatever you're doing to, if the dog won't hold the point unless you're there to make it, I'm going to, after being trained, right, after you've taught it what your expectations are and you still have to be there, I wouldn't call that much of a pointer. I just wouldn't. And I wouldn't, you can't go hunt and the dog goes just a little bit out of sight on you. And if you're not there, it's going to get the bird. That's not really a pointing dog. It's a dog that has to, assuming you've given it every opportunity and taught it what your expectations are, if it still goes over there and if you're not there, gets the bird, you got a dog that was going to hold that bird for just a little while, get your shotgun ready, and then it's gonna bust that bird. And a lot of people like that. But we're talking about developing pointing. So now you got the little puppy, right? And you've exposed it to birds. And let's say, and this happens very frequently when you get a dog with disability, they point and they just stand there. And sometimes in the beginning, it's like for a long time. It's real thrilling and exciting. And so then I got this great pointer. And then you put it on. And it would be nice, understand the difficulty. It would be good if like once a week, you could put a few birds out for it. Not 12 or 20, right? But unless you're hunting, then that's just what happens. But if they get this continuous thing, because it's just like if I'm going to teach you to read, you've never, you're young, you haven't learned to read yet. If we work on it for 2 weeks and then go 4 months and don't, we lose a lot. We're not going to just start up right where we ended. We're going to have to go back. And, if you went a long time without bearing down and studying this stuff kind of hard, and then I'm going to ask you to do it again after a big break, you might be a little less open to this now. It's like, no, I like that stuff better when I don't have to really think too hard. So it's better if with reasonable consistency, I don't care what time of year it is, reasonable consistency, you can get this dog on birds so that it becomes built into what they do and how they think and what they expect. So you expose them to birds. Again, that's the ideal world, every week. I don't care what time of year, every week, weather permitting, of course, that you expose them to birds. So when you have a little guy, and they've showed you point, and they flash pointed, or you got one of those 2-minute points, and you're just calling all the relatives and telling everybody about it. And so you're doing everything right, and they keep, you go out and they're pointing birds. And then what very often happens, not all, very often happens is they go on point, and then they know kind of what happened. Maybe you've shot some for them because they were pointing so well, because you do have to give them a reason to find the birds. I like to carry a dead bird with me. So if they just do a great point, I got something. Whenever it flies or whenever they flush it up or something, I go, I throw something for them. Maybe even shoot a pistol if they're old enough and stuff. No, I want to make sure, not every time. They don't always have to have a reward, but they do have to put together. There's a reason for me to go look for these guys. If you never give them a reason, then there's no reason to just stand there pointing it or even to look for it to begin with. So once they, you know, let's say you shot some birds for them or thrown some dead ones or whatever you've done, so they just got, oh, I point, and then there's a retrieve. Okay, what happens on these little guys then is, this is pretty exciting. And it's exciting on a level, I think, that a lot of times we don't understand, because it's really in their DNA why they're here. You know, there's the you and the relationship thing. That's a huge part of it with these guys. But the other part of it is this, man, this is what I do. This is who I am. You know, I am a hunter, and it's just so cellular for them. And we need to understand it. It's not the widget that we bought, and now we put it out into the field, and now it hunts, and then we take the widget out of the field, and now it's like a poodle in the house. That's really not how this is, right? So they're these hunters, and this is gives them great meaning and great sense of purpose and value. Okay, which is the whole point of existing. So this does that for them. So they love this, right? And they go out and they point, and then, they, you know, there's the retrieve, which is so great. And so now they go out and they point, and then they're going, wow, I'm just going to get this thing. I just love this. And so I'm going to get the bird up, or I'm going to do it. And, you know, so then they start pointing shorter and shorter, and then maybe they even go to just a flash point and then bringing it up. Now, obviously, when they're busting in on these things, you don't shoot and give them rewards for that stuff. So here's the big quandary, right? So this dog has been great. I mean, it was a fantastic pointer. And, you know, if you even be able to shoot some birds for it and do this stuff, and, you know, and now it's going out there and it's flash pointing and busting birds up. And so you stop shooting them and you stop giving them the retrieve, right? That's what everybody says to do. Well, don't give them the retreat. Well, then you have to make sure that you can call them back, because otherwise they're going to chase it. So you can't let them just chase everything that they didn't point. So then you've got to de-chase these guys if they're old enough. If they're not old enough, then you just got to, you know, keep them from going somehow. This is the hardest part of this whole deal in the pointing lab thing, is this part right here. Because if let's say they're 4 months old, 4.5 months old, and they used to point great or fine, and now they're not. And they're not old enough to de-chase, which requires electric collar and obedience and all this stuff. So you can't de-chase them. And if you put a cord on them, then they got the cord on and then they act different. And so, and then they chase birds and you're going, I don't know what to do, because they're not pointing. They're barely pointing at all. And they're chasing birds and it's out of control. And they're too young and I can't, I'm going to put a cord on. At least then I can control this stuff. And I know a lot of people do it. They put a cord on. And sometimes that has worked. So I know that. And many, many times it has not. And it has created, it can, not always, it can create some resentment. Not always. Sometimes you put the cord on them and they're, you know, they go, okay, I got it. And because they're too young for electricity and stuff. Please, they're too young for electricity. You can't de-chase a dog that's still developing this upland skill and doesn't have strong obedience and collar conditioning. So here you go. So you put the cord on, and some of them go, okay, I'll stop. You know, and that's fantastic. And the other thing that happens, and it happens a lot, is that you put this high-powered dog that loves this stuff and points really well, and you put the cord on, and there's all kind of interesting ways people put it on. Sometimes it can really hurt when you start constricting things that people do with this thing. Right? And so your dog is out there and they love this more than anything, right? This gives them meaning. And oh, they love it. The pleasure thing is just pegged. And then, you know, they flash point and they go in after that. And then you stop them from going. And it may be something tied around them where it hurts a lot, or just you just stop them, whatever it is. And then that becomes a consistent thing. They go out there and they find this bird, and then they get, oh, this exciting thing, right? And then you stop them again. And very often, they get, just like you would in that situation, very resentful. So when this very difficult time in the pointing thing development happens, and you get very frustrated, because I know I've been there literally hundreds of times. It's like, ha, here we go again. And you get frustrated, and then you start, my gosh, I'm not going to let you do this, dog. And some of these guys get resentful. And they're like, every time I go out there and do this, you know, you squeeze this or push, you know, do whatever, and then here I am, and the bird flies away. And they get real resentful. And so now, you get a couple things that can happen. They either going to go out and just find the bird and then sit down or stop or just stand there, or they're going to go find the bird and then turn back to you going, all right, I know you're going to get in the middle of this, because they still have this desire to go bush this bird up, right? And they can't, so what's the point? And then they're not going to get it when that happens. They don't understand this, you know, be staunch and then you'll get everything. That this isn't computing in these guys. So they still don't like you too much. So they're looking for either to avoid the situation or get to that bird and get it up before you get in the middle of it. And a lot of times they will completely stop pointing right now. If you stop pointing before, it will go away. There will be no pointing because you have stepped into the middle of this thing at a time where you still didn't have the tools to step into the middle of this thing yet. And so the dog quits pointing and it gets very, very difficult. And that's the part where people just really don't know, you know, it's like, what do I do? So for any of you that have had this, you know, understand, so does the vast majority of everybody else. It's the rare person that has a dog, and I've had a number of them. You know, they just always pointed great. Oh, I love that. I wish that's all it was bred. But most of them, really the larger population falls into this category that does this. And these great pointers start busting stuff. And then, you know, you get all the advice from all the experts on how to intervene. And I'll tell you what I tend to do with these guys. If they had been, were pointing before consistently and in the beginning, like for a long time, those are real good signs. And then as we get more bird exposure, they're getting wild and crazy about the birds, which is, believe it or not, a really good thing. But I can't get in there yet and have the kind of control where they understand exactly what I'm doing and it doesn't relate to the bird at all. And that's probably one of the biggest differences in what I've decided to do with dogs and a lot of other folks do, is I'm not going to ever make this about the bird. And I never do. Because when dogs that I've trained go on point, I want it to be 100% confident, no concern, no fear, no standing there turning around looking at me going, all right, I got it. Are you coming over here? You know, but where they're totally enmeshed in that bird dog thing and they have a lot of confidence, and whether I'm there or not, they understand that's what they're supposed to do. So they'll hold a point over the hill and in the cover until you find them. The way I get that is I never make anything about the bird. So when they told me, we got a 5-month-old dog that was pointing great and a 6-month-old dog, and now, you know, man, it is Katie bar the door, they're after it. So what I do at this point is I stop going in the upland field. It's like, all right, I think we got bold on birds, and you show me that you point, and you understand the game, and you know how to find these guys out in the field. All of this has to be present before we stop, right? You know how to go find them, and you really, really love it. So now I'm going to take it, and I mean, not just kind of, but I mean, I've got a problem on my hands. All right, this dog's going to go out there, and they're going to chase this bird to the next county, and I have to start intervening, and they're just so crazy about it. All right, now I'm going to stop. And now I'm going to go back. We can still go out in the field, take walks to the field, teach them to stand, gun range, all the good stuff. But it's going to be a field where there aren't birds, right? The bird thing, I'm going to stop. And now we're going to go back, and it might take a couple months, but we're going to go back, always do the retrieving stuff all the time so that they always have, you know, what they're born on the earth to do going. And we're going to go back and we're going to get the horse fetch in there and the obedience and the collar conditioning. And we're going to get all of that. And that's not a couple weeks, guys. That's months. So I'll take time off and I'll take a few months off and get all that stuff going so that I'm not making any, they are never in trouble when they're out on a bird, right? They're never in trouble. Oh, no, don't you dare do that. All the stuff that happens. And we go back and we get all that stuff. And so now they're a little bit older and now I have some tools that are clearly understood. And this is whether if they were great pointers bear pointers didn't point at all. Same deal. You know, we're getting a wild and crazy. I'm starting to lose control of this dog, and it's a big dog now, so it's becoming a problem. I go back and I get the tools that I need. So I have that dog fully understanding that when I say here or whatever, right, then they have to do that. Now we go back in the field and we do the whole deep chase thing, which is not about the bird. I don't have a no bird command, and I have an entire podcast on how to deep chase. And it's just about enforcing obedience commands and killing and removing the thought of chasing. I am not punishing a dog for chasing. I never do that. I remove the thought of chasing. And like I said, I have an entire podcast, an entire chapter in the book on de-chasing a dog. So I just take that, there it is, I'm going to go get it. And I just take that thought and replace it with, there it goes. And that has to be done well. And it is not a punishment. And it is not a thing where, and I've had people say, yeah, my dog's de-chased, I can call him off the chase of any bird. If your dog is chasing a bird, whether you can call it off or not, it is not de-chased. A de-chased bird, dog, does not chase. So now you go in, and that takes a few weeks. And it takes more than that, a very clear understanding of what you're doing. Because if you punish the dog on the bird, the bird becomes a bad thing, and nothing destroys a pointer more than that. So you de-chase this dog correctly so that they think anytime a bird flies, they're done. They're done. Now you have a tool that keeps that dog from going in and bringing birds up. Because when they bring a bird up, they're done. But if they don't bring the bird up, then they get the retrieve. So the vast majority, not 100%, the vast majority of dogs can be made to, you know, really become some performing pointers at this time. Now, if you de-chase the dog and you still see no point, you have to believe what you see. So a flushing dog, in my opinion, should be de-chased. Because if they flush it, you're hunting wild birds and they flush a hen, you're not going to shoot it. They can't go after it. So flushing dogs should be de-chased. So everyone should be de-chased, pointer or not pointer. So at this point, when you're still hoping, if you've had a dog that's pointed, then you know you've got one. If yours hasn't yet, you de-chase it. No downsides. Not one downside to de-chasing a dog. Not one. So when it flies and you don't shoot it, they don't go after it. Or if they bump something out there and you're not close enough, they don't chase it. I don't know, have you ever seen anybody at upland field and the dog's out a little too far, which is the handler's fault, not the dog's, and the dog's out a little too far, and there goes this beautiful bird goes flying up and it's too far away for you to shoot, and now the dog's chasing it, you've lost a bird, you've lost a dog, but who wants that, right? So you should have a dog, if they're out for whatever reason and it's too far for you to shoot the bird, that they don't chase it, they go, rats! And rats, why didn't you shoot that? And they don't go after it. So again, de-chase is probably one of the most important training things you can do on an upland dog. And a lot of times, that is one of the most beneficial things to kicking in the point. And if not, continue to do that and continue to expose your dog to birds. But now, you have some tools and the dog isn't going to run away and the thing is a prey. Now, the third part of this, and I'm not going to go into detail too much here, is the woe breaking stuff. So woe isn't coming in at all. There's been no woeing. And that's the first thing everybody wants to do. As soon as their dog goes on point, they start saying woe. It's like, okay. So you're saying woe to this little 4-month-old dog. What is it supposed to do with that? I mean, you're just making noise. And you're teaching it that woe means nothing. So, I've watched woe get yelled and, so don't woe a dog until they're woe broken, and then generally when they're woe broken, then you don't have to woe them in the field. But woe breaking, in my world, does not occur in the field. I don't do it in the field. I don't want these dogs to have negative, bad stuff happen in relation to the bird out in the field. But my woe stuff involves birds at the end of it. But the first, there's a whole entire wool process, right, where you teach a dog, you got to stand there. And then you got to stand there when stuff happens, and then when there's temptations, and then when there's guns, and when I'm throwing bumpers, and you never go. Don't ever let them, don't make them hold and then send them to retrieve, because we're teaching them you got to stand still no matter what. And then you bring birds into it, and there's an entire process, not in the upland field, but out in your training area, where you teach a dog. You know, I take mine ultimately into the flight pen. That's like, all right, I'm going to put you in here, and you're going to stand there, and there's going to be birds flying, scent, sound, overkill, all that stuff, and you're just going to stand there. And pretty soon you brainwash them into, wow, there's a bird that moved or flew or whatever, and I just stand here without a bunch of pressure, without them getting in trouble. But that means a very good, strong wool process that makes sense. And I don't think, you know, let them break and then they get wrapped up on a cord and it hurts like, oh, get out. And then they learn not to do it. Again, sometimes that works, sometimes that creates resentment. I don't go the pain route on that stuff just because I don't have to. You know, I just brainwash them and just through patience more than anything else, teach them, all right, this is what you do. Now you go out there and it's a dog that points. And, you know, if the bird gets up and runs or something, they don't go after it. Because you've already taught them, hey, once you're there, that's the purpose of wool. You know, and you don't go just because the gun went off, unless I send you. And you just don't go unless the bird repositions for hunting dogs. You know, you don't go after the bird. And so, if your dog never points in all of this with a lot of bird exposure, believe what you see. You know, I'm going to say you cannot teach you can force a behavior, but they're not pointing. They're over there doing what you told them. And that is not like a very beautiful point. I've never seen it, you know. I've tried a lot of stuff. So this is sort of how this thing works. And you can use other means to do the stuff and a little bit tougher and a little more punitive stuff if you want. If you associate that with the bird, if they get in trouble out there on the bird, about the bird, okay, some dogs can take that and some cannot. And they will blink birds and come off of birds and be worried about it. It's like, oh, there's that thing. I always get in trouble because they don't really understand the whole picture. So the thing that I talked about right here is allowing that dog to develop a very clear picture in their head about what they're doing and what it's all about and what their role in it is. And if you can maintain that, usually you can bring the pointing out in a really stylish, beautiful way and without ruining that. But you really have to take into account what's in that little guy's head and what they're capable of and what they're not ready for, and then what tools you have and how to use them. And that's the key to the pointing thing. And what I've seen over time is people get a dog and maybe it's young and a lot of times they're young and they don't point at all. And so they just quit putting it on birds. Okay, that's a mistake. Because bird exposure, if you're going to upland hunt, is real necessary. And the more skilled they are, the better hunters they're going to be. If you take them to South Dakota, where 300 birds may get up in the sky at one time, that's not going to teach them the subtleties of pointing. But in your training where you're trying to, and if you have wild birds to train on, all the better, because there's no scent, they're real, they fly away, those things are awesome. That's the best way to get a, you know, then they can't get up close or anything else. And there's, of course, a whole art to that. But you have to have these guys on birds, and you have to know that they don't always get what's happening. And I put my dog on birds four times, he hasn't done anything. Maybe he doesn't even know he's on birds, little guy. You know, I mean, you have to get into their little heads and see what they're doing and make sure that the bird thing is always a good thing. You know, and I'm not being wimpy about it, a little softy. I think the birds always have to be a good thing. And when they show me behavior out there that is unacceptable, then that tells me where to go back in my training program and go to work. But I want, when I tap them on the head in the upland field, for them to go, here we go, in a cooperative, mutually beneficial and understood way. And you can do that. And if the point is in there, with patience and time and understanding what the little guy needs. If it's there, you can bring it out. And if it's not strong enough, it's not going to withstand the wool breaking and all that. You should still de-chase the dog. De-chase is a safety thing that I think should just be mandatory. But you can wool break the non-pointer, and they're still going to be not very good pointers. But if you do have a real pointer, then you come in and you finish the de-chase off with a wool break, and you have a dog that's steady in the upland field. But meanwhile, if you get all these control tools in there, and you still get all the exposures to the birds, okay, then that's what you need to do. Uncatchable, fun birds that don't smell like you, not artificial stuff, not in cages. I'm sorry, guys, not in those trap releases, because they can smell that in a heartbeat, and they know exactly what it is, and the smart guys will figure it out and do whatever you train them to do on a launcher. It won't work out when you're actually hunting real birds and they're a little bit out of sight. Okay, we'll apply there. So it takes some time on this stuff, you guys. It takes basically the first year of the dog's life and maybe more to get this fully developed. And there's little dogs that are going to be fantastic without you. Aren't going to have to do any of this, and they're going to be so good. And you're just lucky. You're just lucky. That's fantastic. The majority of these dogs fall somewhere in between, and so it takes a little bit of this work. So I hope that is, at least for some of you that are kind of, especially that problem area where your pointer quit pointing, or your two-minute pointer went to a flash point, and now you don't know what to do, and it's so frustrating, and you get advice all over the place. That's part of the deal. That's very normal. It happens the majority of the time to everybody, and it's just part of the game. And I know it's frustrating, but just realize that's part of the game, and continue to develop the tools that you need on any upland dog. And pretty soon, what your dog really is going to come back, and they're not going to be worried or concerned or resentful. There's a lot of resentment in the pointing training that I see, and you can get there, but you're going to have to get there on your dog's time, and maybe not so much your own personal calendar. So I hope that's helpful. Talked for 47 minutes. Sorry about that. I wish, you know, if you start your work now, by next hunting season, you can have a really nice kind of superstar dog that doesn't interfere with other dogs and is a real joy to train with. So I hope that helps, and I will be back soon.